Morning. Just so happened, thanks for the prayer, Margaret, for Mon and Myanmar. It just so happens the first time I preached on this passage and the first time I ever preached was at a church in Myanmar. Just by coincidence. Okay, I'll get right into it. We'll start at verse 24. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, which just means twin, it's like probably a nickname, one of the 12 was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." You can imagine the conversation, right? "Thomas, Thomas, we've seen the Lord." "What? We've seen the Lord. He's alive." "Come on, guys." You can imagine how the company, and they go, "Oh, no, think about it, Thomas. It all makes sense." And then they go back and forth. But eventually, Thomas dug his heels in, and in verse 25, "But he said to them, 'Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my fingers where the nails were,'" bit gross, "'and put my hand into his side, I will not believe.'" Thomas didn't believe them. The Greek here for "I will not believe" is very strong. It's not, I'm nearly there, but I need a bit more evidence. It's, "I by no means will I believe." It's a refusal. Thomas refused to believe unless he saw for himself. At first glance, this might seem like a reasonable response. In our modern world today, we're taught to look for evidence for unusual claims. A lot of people characterize Thomas like this, a truth seeker who just wants some evidence. But other commentators have a different view. Other commentators think Thomas had less admirable reasons for doubting. So which of the commentators are correct? Were Thomas's doubts reasonable, or was it actually unreasonable for Thomas to doubt? I actually think it was unreasonable. But wait, I hear you thinking, isn't it reasonable to question supernatural claims like that? In fact, we should question supernatural claims. After all, there's all kinds of crazy things that people claim. But I'm not asking whether it's reasonable for us to question a supernatural claim. I'm asking whether it's reasonable for Thomas to question this particular supernatural claim. There are a few things that make Thomas's situation unique. First, power. Thomas already knew that Jesus had miraculous power. Thomas had just spent the previous few years watching Jesus performing all kinds of powerful miracles, calming storms, making blind see, even raised Lazarus from the dead. The second thing that makes Thomas's situation unique were the witnesses. Thomas had eyewitness accounts from all his fellow disciples. Thomas would have seen firsthand how their sorrow had turned to joy. And the disciples were not just witnessing to seeing Jesus alive, they were witnessing to hearing Jesus' explanations of how the scriptures predicted this. They probably even reminded Thomas that Jesus himself had predicted this. They most likely explained the logic behind the idea of Jesus dying and rising. A third thing that makes this unique is character. See, this wasn't just about trusting an idea. This was about trusting a person. That person was Jesus. You trust an idea based on logic. You trust a person based on character. Thomas himself had been a witness to the character of Jesus, his wisdom, his righteousness, his compassion, and his trustworthiness. To believe that Jesus' predictions were wrong was to believe that Jesus was mistaken or deceitful. Could a man that wise be mistaken? Could a man that trustworthy be deceitful? It's a big call. So Thomas had experienced the trustworthiness of Jesus' character. He'd been given a prediction by Jesus. He had the accounts of the other disciples that the prediction had been fulfilled, and years of seeing that Jesus had the power to fulfill it. So was it really reasonable to keep doubting after all that? I think not. So if cold, hard reason wasn't the cause of Thomas's doubt, what was? There are three possibilities that I can think of. These possibilities are less about the head and more about the heart. Could Thomas have had a heart that was quick to forget? When things got hard, was Thomas just quick to forget the reasons that he believed in Jesus in the first place? In the Bible, there's a pattern of God giving people some reason to follow him and then leaving them for a while to see if they'll persevere, even without spectacular miracles or immediate provision. Take the Exodus. When things got tough, the Hebrews were quick to grumble. They had hearts that were quick to forget God's promises and the miracles that he had already performed for them. A lot of us can sometimes be quick to forget our reasons for believing in the hard times. The crucifixion of Jesus was definitely a hard time for Thomas. This might be part of the reason why Thomas doubted. But I don't think that Thomas was as superficial as the ancient Hebrews. I think there was more to him than that. So what else? Another possibility is that Thomas might have been suffering from trauma. Thomas did actually love Jesus. We read earlier in the story that he was prepared to die for him. Jesus was his hero. He had just witnessed the death of his hero. Witnessing your hero being crucified would have had to have been traumatic. Maybe Thomas was experiencing trauma and hardening his heart as a way of protecting himself. He had gotten his hopes up once and had gotten hurt. Maybe he was afraid to get his hopes up a second time. There might also be a third reason why Thomas doubted. He may have had a heart that was unwilling to accept a crucified Messiah. Nobody expected that God would allow the Jewish Messiah to be killed, let alone crucified. They expected, hoped for, a conquering Christ, not a crucified Christ. If I was suffering under Roman rule, I'd probably hope for that too. Expectations that are close to your heart can be hard to let go of. Paul said the idea of a crucified Christ was a stumbling block for the Jews. It may have been a stumbling block for Thomas too. So there's probably a mix of reasons why Thomas doubted. But it wasn't just Thomas. The others doubted too. On the road to Emmaus, Jesus explained to some of the disciples that they had had false expectations about the Messiah. In Luke 24:25, we read Jesus saying, "How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" Notice that the issue wasn't being slow of mind, but slow of heart. The next time you feel doubt, it's worth asking yourself if it's your head or your heart. Could the feeling be from trauma or a false expectation, or simply being quick to forget when things get hard? Now, I'm not saying it's sinful to feel doubt. You can't help what you feel. But Thomas went beyond feelings. He let the feelings become a decision. He hardened himself despite the evidence. Unlike Thomas, we haven't personally seen the risen Jesus. And for many of us, we feel doubts more because of the lack of what we see. I sometimes feel doubt. There's plenty of times I've struggled with feelings. But feelings like this can be useful. They can motivate you to check your assumptions, review the evidence. I'm not an expert by any means. I've still got plenty of questions. But my experience is that I've been surprised by really good answers to a lot of my questions. So far, none of my questions are serious enough to give up on the person of Jesus. It's the person of Jesus that makes me want to believe, despite sometimes the feelings of doubt from time to time. Something within me responds to the character of this person. There are some Christians who don't struggle with doubt, but most of us will feel doubt at some point. So how should we treat these people? Verse 26. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. A week later, Thomas was still with them. Presumably, the disciples had treated him with enough respect that he felt comfortable enough to remain with them. We should err on the side of gentleness and respect to those who doubt. Jude 1:22 says, "Show mercy to those who doubt." Maybe they haven't had the kind of evidence that you have. Or maybe they've come up against hurdles that you haven't. Maybe they're intellectual hurdles. Or maybe they've experienced trauma and they're struggling to trust. Thomas probably felt he would never be able to trust again. The barriers to faith were insurmountable. The doors to his heart were locked. But God can have a way of surprising us. Verse 26. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Suddenly, Jesus was right there, right in front of everyone. Thomas's previous stubbornness now probably felt silly. His stubborn words came back to haunt him. Would Jesus take him back after he'd said that? Verse 27. Then he, Jesus, said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands? Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." This was a gentle rebuke from Jesus. Jesus, who is always gentle with the fragile, knew about Thomas's stubbornness, but he also knew about his trauma and that Thomas did actually love Jesus. Jesus wanted to give Thomas a way back, another chance, a way which Thomas, to his credit, took hold of straight away. Thomas renewed his loyalty to Jesus as his Lord and as something even more. Verse 28, Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Finally, Thomas saw Jesus with clear eyes. Thomas finally beheld Jesus for who he really was. Jesus was no failed Christ. In fact, he was more than just the Christ. He was God. Thomas remembered the prophecies that Yahweh would once again tabernacle with Israel as he once did in the temple, that God would once again walk with humanity as he once did in Eden. Thomas finally realized that God had been doing that as Jesus. God heard humanity's cries and had taken on flesh and blood. He had chosen a criminal's end to pay by his blood a debt that we couldn't. And now he was risen. Thomas beheld his Lord and his God, and Thomas believed. Verse 29. Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." What did this statement mean for Thomas, and what does it mean for us? For Thomas, it was a gentle rebuke that he had missed out on a blessing. Jesus didn't appear to Thomas because he was more blessed than others, but because he was more needy. Imagine if Thomas had been able to get over his doubts and believe in Jesus before seeing him with his own eyes. Thomas might have missed out on something here. But what does it mean for us? I'm guessing a little bit here, but here's my guess. We may be tempted to think that we're not as blessed as Thomas because we haven't seen the risen Lord with our own eyes. But maybe this gives us the opportunity for a greater blessedness. Maybe Jesus is saying that actually those who haven't seen have an opportunity for a kind of blessing that Thomas missed out on. We haven't seen the risen Jesus, but we can read about his character. Jesus might be suggesting that those who are willing to take a risk and follow him because of his character are better off than those who are hedging their bets until all the evidence is in. Consider the Samaritans. Remember back the story of the Samaritan village? They ended up believing him because of his words. For them, the character of Jesus was the most important evidence. Now, I'm not saying that evidence doesn't matter. After all, the apostles were chosen as witnesses to give evidence of what they saw. John wrote this book we're reading in order to provide evidence. Verse 30. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John's gospel may not be absolute proof, but it is his piece of evidence, his testimony of something that he and the other disciples claim actually happened, a claim that they are willing to die for. They gave their lives in the hope that we, though that we haven't seen the risen Jesus, would have the chance to hear about him and believe.